Opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the editor or publisher, who are neither responsible nor liable for investors' decisions resulting from any published sections in this podcast. Nothing in this podcast constitutes an offer, recommendation, or solicitation of buyers to sell any of the securities mentioned. Copyright 2009, Addicted to Profits. Reproduction without permission is prohibited. David Skrika, editor of AddictedToProfits.net. As you know, I do a weekly podcast here at Addicted to Profits, and usually I do this by myself, but because of the recent volatility and sell-off in the stock market, and because of some other good things that are happening here today on, I guess it's November the 3rd, I decided to invite my friend of Wall Street Window. You know him. He's my co-star in the little videos we do. Mike Swanson, editor of Wall Street Window, here to talk about the markets. And I guess we'll go a little more in-depth than I usually go on my podcast, talk about everything from the stock markets to commodities to gold, etc. So, Mike, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I guess you noticed today gold's up $25 an ounce.
What? It is?
Yeah, $25.
Oh, of course. I'm joking. Yes, of course I noticed that gold is up $25 an ounce. And I think today is unique in that, like, you know, I'm someone who takes a longer term perspective. So I usually don't get like all excited or all depressed about one day's action either way. But I think what I like about today is the dollar was actually up this morning and gold went up on news that the Indian Central Bank was buying about 200 tons or $8 billion worth of gold. And I think this is real positive because I think one fearful thing that even bulls have had on gold was that the IMF, all this dumping they were going to do was going to cause the price to temporarily decline. But it looks like there's more than enough foreign central banks out there, especially Asian central banks, who are willing to kind of take and sop all that gold, up. So I think that's a real positive for the gold market here, that there's the demand on the other side. And as Mike and I were talking about before we started it, Mark Faber recently said that he thought that the Indian Central Bank was the best run central bank in the world, because not only do they look at inflation, but they also look at asset prices and et cetera. So the fact that they would buy gold, and obviously certain sources think that they're very well run, is probably positive going forward.
Well, I think it shows you that these high, the $1,000 plus price of gold is for real. If the central banks are willing to pay over $1,000 an ounce for it, they believe that that's not an overvalued price. They're willing to pay that amount because I think they think gold's going to go higher. One thing about it, though, is, I remember if you think back to September or early or late August, at the time, that's right when gold was busting out. And a lot of people were saying the rally was a fake out. And yep, you were just going to lose your ass if you bought in right there. And I know both of us were buying in. And we were reading these articles, or some people were forwarding them to us. And one of the arguments was coming from that Robert Prechter. And he was asserting that the dollar was going to bottom out and just have a big blast off rally. And that's going to make gold crash. And of course, he was proved wrong. The stock market went up, gold went up, and so forth.
Come on, Prechter's never wrong.
Well,
sorry, I couldn't help it.
Well, he says he's never wrong. He just says that the things haven't reached his target prices yet.
Well, so, I think one day I'm going to make a gazillion dollars. So I guess I just haven't made that much money yet.
I guess not. But the thing about it, though, is right now, or the past week, it's been very similar in that we've had a correction in the stock market, and the gold stocks really, they got smashed back down pretty hard, too. Gold's at a new high today, and the gold stocks are just recovering from the recent sell-off they've had. But a similar type thing has happened where people have gotten a lot of publicity in predicting the stock market crashes and big rallies in the dollar that's supposed to crash gold and make the stock market fall. And the stock market was correcting and making people worry about this. The difference, though, it wasn't just Prechter saying this, but people that, frankly, I do have some respect for, or I think are worth listening to, like the guy on CNBC, that Art Cashin, and that the guy, that Big Bear last year, Rubini, or whatever his name is. But I think that today, you know, the fact that gold is up $25 proves that the stock market isn't going to crash and the dollar is not about to start some big bull market. And these people were just as wrong as Prechter was back in September. You know, people want to argue against bull markets like you're seeing in gold, but it's really a futile endeavor to do.
Yeah, I think the thing about the dollar rally is, you know, and even guys that, like, I really, really respect, like Mark Faber, have been looking for a dollar rally, or Jim Rogers. And I think about those things is that I'm really wondering, because so many people are calling for a rally in the dollar. Yeah, sure, the sentiment is somewhat negative. And I recently did a couple of interviews about this, but I'm really suspicious about how strong this rally is going to be. Because it seems to me like everyone's sitting on their hands waiting for this rally in the dollar, and decline in commodity prices, and decline in the market, and decline in gold. So, yeah, sure. Like, a lot of times you can be oversold and just remain oversold for a very, very long period of time. Like, I think if we do get a rally in the dollar, go look at the dollar chart from, say, late 2005 into 2008. You'll see there's a whole bunch of little rallies, maybe a few weeks on one rally, maybe a month. And all the rallies just take the dollar up a couple points in price. And that was basically over a three-year decline, a three-year period. So I'm starting to think that we could be in a similar scenario where sure, there'll be little rallies here and there, but they're going to be very, very small. And the dollar is just going to kind of keep grinding lower. And another point with gold is, I think today, with the Indian central bank news and the fact that all governments around the world are printing money and doing quantitative easings and have big deficits, when you see gold breaking out to a new high and really the dollar isn't breaking down, I think that's proof that I don't think we need this huge decline or crash in the dollar for gold to go significantly higher. Like, the one comment I've made is basically from fall of last year, is that basically from 2002 to 2007, 2008, that first move up in the dollar, a lot of it was due to dollar, or sort of move up in gold. A lot of it was due to dollar weakness. I'm wondering now if we're going to see more gold strength than dollar weakness.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Well, with you, I was just thinking, you know, I've spent a lot of time, you know, looking at the broad market averages and so forth, because I'm about 30% invested in gold stocks, and the rest of it's spread out in international markets and stuff in the United States. You're pretty much, I don't know, are you more than like 90% invested in gold stocks?
Yeah, I'm probably
more spread out in other stuff too.
See, with me it's very difficult because I invest in a lot of venture capital. So, right, you know, I invest in like seed financing and pre-IPOs. Sure. And obviously, because when the credit markets fell apart last year, companies had an inability to raise money. So I have deals that I thought when I invested in them, say, 2 years ago, they'd be trading by now. But now there's been a delay in listing and coming public. So those are, I consider, part of my investments. And a couple of those, I have to admit, I just written off, because you always know that when you get a big downturn, a couple of those companies are just going to go by the wayside. But if I were to include the venture capital deals, yeah, I'd probably be 60 to 70% in gold. Okay. And, you know, then the emerging markets. And I guess I'll put it this way, is that investments in U.S. dollars, I probably only have roughly of 10 to 20% of my portfolio. So everything else is a counter U.S. dollar play. Like, either I'm, you know, long a resource stock or gold stock, or I'm long, you know, an emerging market or emerging market company. You know, that sort of thing. Like for example, I still have a little bit of my TATA position, TTM. And, you know, I've sold the majority of it on the big move it's had up. But the thing is, even though that's, you know, on the NYSE and it's listed in U.S. dollars, I consider that a non-U.S. dollar, really, company, because, you know, it mainly trades in India. So that's the kind of...
How's that stock done on this correction?
It's actually held up very well. If you look at it, it's just kind of consolidated since September, and it actually looks like it could, you know, sit here for a while before the next move higher. So,
because that's one thing I noticed over the past couple of days. You know, we've had this, you know, pretty quick correction in the stock market, and we were talking the other day about how intense the selling was, like 90%
down days.
We saw two 90% day 90. We saw 2 days where 90% of the orders were sell orders, which is very unusual to see 2 days like that. Of course, we saw the VIX jump up, the put-to-call ratio jump up. Yeah. We're seeing real panic in the market on this recent drop.
Yeah.
But one thing about it, though, is, you know, the China market, I notice, has actually held up very well. The other day, when our market in the United States made a new low, the Shanghai Stock Exchange didn't. And a lot of the stocks I own that are China stocks, you know, some of them are doing very well. They've held up real well in this correction, and they look like they're probably going to break out and make new highs, and you know, within a month or something.
Like when I look at that Tata chart, for example, that's what it looks like. It looks like this is just a little consolidation, and it doesn't look like any technical damage has been done, right? Even, you know, if you look at the S&P here, like the S&P's up a couple points as we're talking, you know, or actually it's flat now. But if it kind of just stays flat here for the next couple days, it looks like it could rally sooner rather than later, you know, and build a little short-term base here, kind of like it did in the June-July correction. So, like, and I don't know if it's going to be up and away, but again, like we said, like the fact that you have this intense selling, really the market hasn't dropped a lot and doesn't look like a lot of technical damage has been done in a lot of things. It definitely looks like this is nothing more than a pullback, you know? So, and again, history would kind of be on the side of that, where if you look at the market, for example, right? The history of when you get a bottom like we had in March and this big rally is usually you just don't go up for 6 months and top. Usually, okay, maybe the first 6 months will be the kind of easy gains from the market bottom, like kind of like happened in 1975 or you know, 1908. But what will happen after that is then the market will continue to go up for, say, another year or so, but kind of go up on a more gradual kind of basis. Like it won't go up 60% in the next 6 months. The S&P might only go up 10 or 20% in the next 6 or 9 months.
Sure.
You know.
But the thing is that a move of 10-20%, you know, if you're in the right stocks, they'll go up 30% or more.
Oh, yeah.
That's basically what I found, you know, in August and September. I bought some China stocks and other stocks, and they jumped up. The gold stocks jumped up pretty good.
Yeah. I totally agree. Like, I look at some stocks now on my list. Like, I guess, you know, Tata would be one, and the disclosure is I still own a little bit. But yeah, that looks like that's the kind of company that, yeah, if you get a 20% rally in the S&P, that's the kind of company that could pop 30, 40, 50%, right? So, no, I agree with you 100%. Like, even at the bottom in March, if you want to look at it this way, if you would have bought all the companies that were extremely oversold, it's like a lot of the casinos or the banks or, you know, Ford, things of that nature, you could be up 2, 3, 400% even with just a 50% rally in the S&P. Like, I had this list of stocks that I'm still kicking myself because I didn't buy most of them that I was watching that were stocks like Virgin Mobile and KKR Financial. These are all stocks. Basically, I started looking at all the stocks that were trading like under a dollar at the time. And I was just going to say, you know what? I should do what John Templeton did back in 39. And I should buy like 10 of these stocks, put a grand into each one. And I am kicking myself because a lot of those stocks have gone to $4 or $5. So it just tells you that if you're in the right stocks or companies, and some can be for different reasons. Some can be because they're garbage companies and you just think they're going to have a big bounce. And some can be because, say, they're really fundamentally undervalued and they think they can outperform the market. But whatever, if you're in the right companies, you can really, you know, outperform the market. And I think another example of that, to get back to what we're talking about here today, is the gold stocks. Like, me and you are both bullish on gold, and we're probably more bullish on gold than we are the rest of the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, like the gold stocks and gold are, you know, gold's at a new high here while the market is still consolidating. Like, gold, I think they'll continue to kind of outperform. Now, the gold stocks get somewhat negatively affected by the stock market when it goes down like it did. But I think at some point, if gold keeps, you know, outperforming like this, you're going to have to see the gold stocks just kind of, you know, begin to catch up and really begin to outperform the stock market?
Well, what I found since March is that when the market, the gold stocks seem to be tracking the broad market average, yeah, S&P 500 and so forth, but they're just more volatile. So when the market goes up, they tend to go up more. Yeah. And they also seem to lead the market a little bit for some reason. Like yesterday, the S&P made a new low on this correction in the middle of the day, but the gold stocks held up and they actually went up into the close. Some of them managed to get in the green. Of course, today, they're up 5% or more, and the market's, just a little bit in the green. But I think both of us see this, both of us see this as merely a temporary correction right now. We both think the market's going to get its footing and end up making, new highs before the year's over. Yeah. I think we're still going to get a really nice rally. But I would get, the real sense, though, that at least in the past week, this has been a minority opinion. I mean, over the weekend, I was reading a bunch of articles. I couldn't find one person that was
bullish,
saying, that was saying now is the time to buy. In fact, I put out a video a week ago on last Wednesday.
Yeah.
And I think I titled it like, now is not the time to sell, but the time to buy. And I got like, a dozen people saying,
calling you an idiot.
Oh, it's crazy. And they're saying, you need to listen to Gerald Celente and stuff like that. But, and then today I'm looking
at who, by the way, I will come out and say this, because we've already said stuff about Prechter, so why not? Yeah, that guy is a complete madman, in my opinion. I will say that. And you, all you Celente fans can write me hate mail, but that guy's a maniac, in my opinion. Anyhow.
I don't think he's a maniac.
Oh, I think he's a maniac.
I don't think he's crazy. I just think he's full of shit. Yeah, that he just pretended. He brought up to me that...
We're going
to
make a lot of friends with this podcast.
That's okay. But no, you brought up to me that... I think like it's an astrologist or something. Like in the 60s, there's this woman, I forget her name, but she became a famous astrologist. I think she predicted Kennedy was going to get killed or something. And she just would, if you just make enough predictions...
Yeah. Well, the one that I've already said about...
Right. And then, like you point this out to me, everything he predicts is the end of the world. It's all doomsday.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Is that, again, I got really nothing against Celente, but if you go on his Wikipedia page, you'll see that every prediction he's made is of the negative tone. So, he predicted the Asian crisis, this, that. So you're just kind of like, well, yeah, if you make enough negative predictions, if you say the stock market is going to crash, well, sometimes in the next 20 years, it is going to crash. And granted, let's face it, I've been wrong plenty of times. You've been wrong plenty of times.
Sure.
But it's just like, don't go painting someone like they predicted everything when you really don't know how long this guy's been saying this and predicting it. And, like the old saying goes, a dead clock is right twice a day.
That's a problem right there. Like the email the person sent me, it said something like, you need to listen to Gerald Celente. He's an expert on trends or something. And the thing about it is you have no idea how he analyzes anything. He just makes these statements. Whereas even if you disagree with what you or me are saying, at least we're explaining why we're coming to our conclusions. Nope. We're not just making wild predictions. I mean, last year, I don't think of it as even predictions. Like last year, I was in the summer, I thought the stock market might crash. And I was saying, all these technical reasons, but then saying, well, Fannie Mae is going to go bankrupt. Here are the reasons. I'm not just making these wild
statements. The perfect example is I did a kind of a debate with Bob Hoy last spring. And Hoy is one of these guys who thinks we're going through a big credit contraction and deflation. But I disagreed with him. And I was saying that I thought it was like 37, 38, not like, 30, 31. And I think by the rally in the last 7 months, Bob's a great guy, but I think I was proven correct. But he was correct more than me last year, so that's where I can say that sometimes. But anyway, but what I'm saying is, with Hoy, I see his analysis. He lays it out that he basically thinks this is like the 1870s or 1930s, and we're seeing a big crash and credit contraction. At least I understand how he's coming to these conclusions. He's looking at economic cycles, so I do a lot of economic cycles. I just disagree with him with where we are in the cycle. But like you said, like some of these guys, they just come out and they say some crazy outlandish things, and maybe one or two of them are right, and you have no clue how the guy has come to this prediction, and then, you know.
No, that's the thing. But they get a lot of attention. Now, anyway, what I meant to, one thing I was going to bring up with you, I guess we're talking, I'm looking at the Barron's website.
Yeah.
And there's an article in there, it says, Getting Technical, and it's titled, Setting Free the Bears, then it says, Buying the Dip is as Dead as the Amazing Stock of Ants Finally Peters Out. I'm just saying that here we've had a correction. The market's gone down like 7% or something. We saw panic in the market. And I can't find just hardly any articles where people are saying it's just a correction. You see articles like this where they say it's all over. You know, so I think it's real bullish from a contrarian
standpoint. But no, I agree with you. And again, it's like me and you have also often debated these psychological indicators, right? Like we talked about it back in the summer of 2008 when, you know, actually in the summer of 2008, the bearish readings on the market were almost as high as the bearish readings in the bottom in late 2008, early 2009.
Or just as high as they were this last March.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But one thing that we both made the content, the comment of at the time, remember you told me you talked to like Asif, and he made this comment that where are these bears? People may be saying they're bearish, but no one's really selling and no one's really acting bearish. Well, now I think it's kind of the opposite. Okay, that investor's intelligence may show a lot more bulls than bears at the moment, but I just don't think people are like fully invested in the market or diving in or, you know, or buying like crazy. I think they're kind of bulls and name only and not really in action, right?
Well, that's certainly true if you look at the average investor. I mean, I don't know anybody. Well, I only know a few people that are new in the stock market personally that are getting into the market and trying to trade and so forth. But I've, you know, seen mutual fund data that shows that the average person hasn't been pulling money out of the market for the past couple months. And then there was an article I read in Investors Business Daily saying that the number of stock trades on E-Trade and Ameritrade, all these big brokers, has dropped since March, while like the number of trades people are doing in Forex has gone up. So there's basically less average people actively trading the stock market now than there was a year ago or in March even though the market's been going higher.
And I think the thing we have to understand here is, well, some of those people were jumping near the top of this bull market. I think a lot of that is a long-term trend. We've both discussed this too, that, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, as the 15, 20-year secular bear market kind of panned out or played out, we saw basically retail investors not participating in the market because they were sick of it, because it hadn't gone anywhere for 15 or 20 years. And see, I think that's where, I think that this bear market is like the 74, 75 bear market, where it's making people sick of stocks because now they haven't done anything in 10 years. And you'll see that for the next 10 years, that the average retail investor won't get in. And then that will inversely turn into a positive, because what will happen is, like, for example, in 1949, only like 3 or 4% of the population was invested in the stock market. Well, that set the stage for the bull market of the 50s or 60s, because there's a lot of pent-up demand on the sidelines. So if we get most investors who were speculating in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s washed out of the market, but say by 2015 to 2020, you know, the majority of the population's not in, well, then again, we have this kind of pent-up demand going on in the market, ultimately. So I think, like, I always, like, one criticism people have had of this rally, and this is going back to, you know, May or June, and the market's a lot higher than it was in May or June, is, oh, there's no volume. The volume's not high enough, blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's exactly what this article, Setting Free the Bears on Barron's, has said.
Where's the volume coming from? People have been wiped out. Half the hedge funds in the world are gone. The volume's not going to magically appear. We're now entering a secular decline in stock trading volume. I think people have to understand that. Anyhow, go on about this article.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that's what it's saying. The article is saying is bearish because the volume's dissipated over the past couple months.
Yeah, but again, that, like, my argument is, you know, we had the big short covering volume in a lot of the financials early in the rally in March, April. But again, people have been washed out of the market. So, you've made the comment to me that after the 2000 bust in .com, 2000 to 2002, most of the volume from 03 to 07 was hedge funds and managed money, right? Well, sure. This bust wiped them out. So again, that's I think right. What people have to understand is the volume is going to be significantly lower for years and years to come. There's not going to be as much hedge funds. There's not going to be as much, you know, money managed by hedge funds, and the average retail investor is not going to be as involved, right? So, and by the way, this is all another, just another positive argument for gold, because the gold market is so small that all it needs is if it can just get 1 or 2% of the people who are, you know, or 1 or 2% of the volume that hedge funds are trading, or 1 or 2% of the volume that retail investors are trading in .com stocks, if the gold market, majors, mid-tier, seniors, just gets, like I said, 1 or 2 or 3% of that volume, those stocks will all go up like crazy because it's such a small market. So again, the fact that most people are scared out of the market isn't that detrimental to gold, because the market is so small and only needs a much smaller percentage of investors involved in it to make it go higher.
Well, I noticed too, as you know, gold is up so much today, but oil is up pretty good too. And I was looking this morning at some stocks and agriculture stocks like Archer Daniels Midland.
Yeah,
are starting to look pretty good. They've held done really well in this correction, and the DBA agriculture ETF has done real well too. So it looks like commodities as a whole, gold, I think, has led it. Gold started going up, you know, in September, but maybe now the rest of the commodities are going to start moving too.
Well, if you look at the XOI, the major oil index, you'll see that it had a lot of resistance in the 1050 area. Basically, it was in a trading range between about 750 and 1050. It's a wide range, but that was still the range from October to about September. And it broke up, and then it went back out above that, and then went back to 1050 on this correction, and now is up again to about 1070 today. So again, it kind of looks like it came back down to its former resistance, which is now support, and the oil stocks are about to move higher. And no, I agree with you. Like a few weeks ago in my letter, I recommended that people take a look at the RJA, which is the Rogers Agriculture Index, at about $7. And my whole thing was, okay, in September, October, early October, I kind of thought there was going to be this correction, right? So where do you put your money when you think there's going to be a correction?
Well, it's already up 10% since then.
That was my kind of philosophy, that we want to put our money in some place that, in my opinion, had limited downside. You know, it's basically like you're getting defensive, right? You know, you're looking for value, you know, even though a lot of things have run. See, I talked about earlier about the junk stocks leading. Well, even though I'm bullish on the market, now is not the time to get into the junk stocks, right? Now is not the time to buy Las Vegas Sands. Like, you should have been buying Las Vegas Sands when it was $5 in March and April, and now it's $15, right? Now all of that kind of, I guess, easy money that has been made in those trades is out of the market. So now we have to look for things going forward. But I think another piece of advice is, even though Mike and I are very bullish on gold, and is that gold stocks are probably the most volatile companies in the world. Like the stock market, let's go back the last 30 years in the stock market to 1979. The stock market has essentially seen in that time frame, six corrections of about 20%, okay, in that 30 years. That's 1980 to 1982, 1987, 1990, 1998, 2000 to 2002, and 2007 to 2009. And, you know, it's one every 5 years. Like gold stocks, they see like four corrections of 20% a year. Yeah. So it's like, you know, and do four times like 30, you've probably had 100 corrections of 20% or greater in gold stocks in those 30 years. So we're just trying to show you they're very, very volatile. So even though we're bullish on gold, I always recommend to people, I had a couple emails today, should we be buying gold stocks today? But I even put out on an alert I did Friday near the close that you had to love a stock like Agnico Eagle, which had been beaten down to $53 a share at that time, right? And basically, so, you know, my opinion is, you know, wait for these pullbacks and use the pullbacks as the opportunities to average in, and don't chase, because it's going to come back to you. Like, again, if you look at Agnico Eagle, this is a perfect example of a stock like this. And I'll just do this quickly. If you go back to, say, the beginning of the year in Agnico Eagle, you'll see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 corrections of 10% or greater, right? Just from the beginning of this year. Right? So again, like, these stocks are very volatile, and I think you should.
Well, they're up 5% today.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Yeah, like 5%, just so you know, for our readers or listeners, that's like the Dow being up. Excuse me, by the way, I have a little bit of allergies. So if people are asking what those sounds are, that's what they are, right? But anyhow, yeah, if the Dow was up 5% today, that'd be like it up 500 points. Yeah. You know, so that's how volatile these things are, you know? So anyhow, so I guess we should end off here, but I guess our basic conclusion is, and Mike, I'll let you have a finishing statement yourself, is like my fourth quarter breakout, and on the stock market, yeah, sure, there might be another leg lower, the market might move a little lower, but I agree with you, this is kind of just a consolidation before another move higher, you know.
Well, I think short term the action in gold and the gold stocks, I think that suggests that there really isn't too much more downside to the stock market, but of course we'll know for sure in a couple days.
Yeah, and like I said, even if we had another plunge lower, meaning say there's another bad 200 or 300 point day, I think because of a lot of the oversold readings I'm seeing shorter term in the market, I think for me personally, I would just think that is just whatever. It's going to drop for a week and go down another few percent, you know?
Okay, well, I better take off too. Yeah, it's good talking to you, and hopefully people, you know, get some good information out of this.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll try to do this a little more often, because I know with me, it kind of does, it's a little energizing to do these podcasts with someone else once in a while. But yeah, so take care, and we'll probably do this, you know, it's early November, maybe we'll do this right after Thanksgiving or in early December again together.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later, bye-bye.
Sure. You stopped recording.